is Tuesday, November 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, a suspect is charged in connection with a potentially catastrophic Australian terror plot. Syrian peace talks are set to resume, and Jay-Z will get a lot of attention at the Grammy Awards in January. It's all ahead. In Australia have charged a man with planning to carry out a terrorist attack during New Year's Eve celebrations in Melbourne. Officials say the 20-year-old Muslim man faces life in prison if found guilty. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Investigators describe the apparent plot as potentially catastrophic. They say the suspect, an Australian citizen of Somali descent, allegedly planned to shoot as many people as he could with an automatic rifle at a New Year's Eve party at Federation Square in the centre of Melbourne, one of the most popular locales in Australia's second biggest city to enjoy New Year festivities. Officials believe the man, who's not been named, was acting alone and had obtained an Al-Qaeda manual online with instructions for carrying out such an attack. He also allegedly is a sympathiser of the Islamic State militant group. Deputy Commissioner Shane Patton says officers had been monitoring him as a person of interest since January.
The male is one of our high-risk persons of interest. We have been monitoring him for a very lengthy period of time. He's an Australian citizen and he's of Somalian parents. The allegations are that he was planning to commit a terrorist act and that he attempted to obtain a gun to do so.
The man was arrested Monday during police raids at his family home in suburban Melbourne and at a property belonging to a relative. Australia's Federal Justice Minister Michael Keenan said it was the 14th alleged plot disrupted by the nation's security agencies and police in the past 3 years. Keenan said the charges were a reminder of the depravity of the terrorists. 74 people have been charged by Australian counter-terrorism police since 2014, when the nation's terror threat level was raised to probable. In August, police said they'd thwarted conspiracies to smuggle a bomb onto a plane at Sydney Airport and another to set off a device that could release toxic gas. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
It is time now for social media. Well, today is Giving Tuesday, and there is a hashtag called Giving Tuesday. It's characterized as a new global day for giving back. It calls on followers to help us kick off the giving season and to give back this year on Tuesday, November 28th. So in that spirit, the actor Lin-Manuel Miranda tweeted, "Good morning. Happy hashtag Giving Tuesday. If you don't have a dollar to give, you still have your time, your focus, your voice. Be generous." Giving Tuesday tweeted, "It's about all kinds of giving. Treat a friend to lunch. Open the door for your neighbor. Buy a colleague a coffee. Do whatever you can, big or small, to spread kindness and the spirit of hashtag Giving Tuesday today." The sports network ESPN tweeted, "This hashtag Giving Tuesday helped take down cancer and consider making a donation to the At the V Foundation in honor of someone you love. 100% of donations support cancer research and programs." And that's a look at social media. Here are some of the top news stories trending. The Pope calls for unity in Myanmar but avoids mentioning the Rohingyas. A Turkish-Iranian gold trader pleads guilty and cooperates with prosecutors. Ivanka Trump urges India to close the professional gender gap. And President Donald Trump heads to Congress to rally Republican senators on a tax overhaul. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOANews.com website. This is VOA. Thank you.
This is Science in a Minute.
Japanese researchers found that gamma rays produced by lightning strikes react with the surrounding air and produce radioactive isotopes and positrons, which are the antimatter equivalent to electrons in regular matter. In February 2017, gamma ray detectors sensed a large gamma ray spike soon after lightning struck an area a few hundred meters away. After studying data gathered during the strike, the scientists found that there were actually three distinct gamma ray bursts. The first burst lasted about a millisecond. The second decayed over several dozen milliseconds, and the final emission lasted for about a minute. It was in that third and final emission that the antimatter positrons were detected. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, the Grammy Award nominations are out, and we'll hear all about them. Talks involving the Syrian government and opposition forces aimed at bringing an end to the six-year war resumed Tuesday in Geneva. The brutal conflict triggered after President Bashar al-Assad's crackdown on an uprising during the 2011 Arab Spring has killed close to a half million people. As Henry Ridgewell reports from London, several regional and global powers have intervened in the conflict, and it is they who will likely drive the terms of any peace deal.
As the talks resume, the bombs continue to fall. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights says more than 50 civilians died in Russian airstrikes Sunday on the Islamic State-held territory in the village of al-Shafa in the eastern Deir Azor province. Russia confirmed its bombers carried out an attack, but says only militants were killed. Since entering the war in 2015, Moscow has reversed the major territorial losses suffered by Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's forces, says Jane Kinnamont of the London Policy Institute, Chatham House.
So while Russia is now playing peacemaker, it is its military intervention that has really started to create what seems to be an emerging victory for Bashar al-Assad.
Aided, says Kinnamont, by a fractured opposition. But for the first time at the Geneva talks, the different factions will be represented by a single unified delegation. They are demanding Assad play no part in Syria's future. Following a meeting Friday in Riyadh, the opposition's chief negotiator, Nasser al-Hariri, stressed everything is up for discussion in the talks. The UN Special Envoy to Syria, Stefan de Mistura, has avoided directly addressing Assad's future and said the focus will be on working towards elections. Again, Jane Kinnamont.
Of course, there's never been a free or fair election in Syria for the presidency, so that's seen by the opposition as a way simply of keeping him.
Western powers accuse Assad's government of gross human rights violations, including the bombing of civilians, widespread torture and killings. Damascus characterizes its crackdown as part of a global battle against terrorism. Buthaina Shaban is an envoy to President Assad.
Assad is a hero because he stood his ground, he stood with his people. He fought terrorism.
While Russia and Iran have offered backing to Assad, Western powers, including the United States, have supported moderate opposition groups battling Islamic State. Kurdish forces control swathes of the north, angering Turkey, which has sent troops into Syria. On all sides, war weariness has set in, says Kinnamont.
The conflict in Syria has been started by local causes, but fueled partly by international intervention. So there's a chance to de-escalate partly because the international powers don't really want to be fueling this war anymore. However, the goals of the uprising in the first place, you know, to fight dictatorship, to have a more dignified way of life in Syria, none of those have been met.
The White House says US President Donald Trump and Russia's President Vladimir Putin stressed the importance of the Geneva talks in a phone call last week. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Kensington Palace said Tuesday Prince Harry and American actress Meghan Markle will be married at St. George's Chapel in Windsor Castle in May of next year. The palace said in a statement that Her Majesty the Queen has granted permission for the wedding to take place in the chapel. The royal family will pay for the wedding. The palace said that further details about the wedding would be released in due course. The couple officially announced their engagement a day earlier, posing for photographs on the grounds of Kensington Palace hours after the announcement. Harry and Markle lifted the veil of secrecy that shrouded their 18-month romance after meeting on a blind date and becoming acquainted on a camping trip in Botswana. In an interview Monday, the 33-year-old Harry, son of the late Princess Diana, said he proposed and the 36-year-old divorcee said she quickly accepted over a roast chicken dinner in London a few weeks ago.
It happened a few weeks ago, earlier this month, here at our cottage. It's a standard, typical night for us.
It's a cozy night. What were we doing? Just roasting chicken
and
having
trying to roast chicken.
Trying to roast a chicken, and it was just an amazing surprise. It was so sweet and natural and very romantic. He got on one knee.
Of course.
Was it an instant yes from you?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I could barely let you finish proposing. I was like, "Can I say yes now?"
She didn't even let me finish. She said, "Can I say yes? Can I say yes now?" And then there was hugs, and I had the ring in my finger, and I was like, "Can I give you the ring?" And she goes, "Oh yes, the ring." So no, it was a really nice moment. It was just the two of us, and I think I managed to catch her by surprise as well.
Well, after the wedding, the couple plans to settle in at Nottingham Cottage on the grounds of Kensington Palace, where Harry's brother, Prince William, and William's wife, Kate, and their children live. David Flint, the national convener for Australians for a Constitutional Monarchy, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty the engagement announcement did not catch him by surprise.
Well, no, because of all of the stories that have been coming out of the media. It would have surprised me, had I not heard of this.
A generation or two ago, would this have taken Britain by surprise?
I think much more, and you need only go back to Princess Margaret, for example, Princess Margaret's wish to marry the man that she loved, and he would have been divorced, and that was not thought to be appropriate at the time. And even when younger members of the royal family were in the process of divorcing, like Prince Andrew and Fergie, there was a disapproval of the members of the royal family divorcing, particularly Charles and Andrew. It received a very bad press, let's say. But I think times have changed. People have realized that you can't be condemned to a life of celibacy or loneliness if your marriage doesn't work out, particularly a short marriage, such as the one in this case. And I think it's now generally accepted that you can be divorced and still make a very good wife or husband.
Prince Harry is the fifth in the line of succession. What is his future?
I don't think he's going to succeed unless something terrible happens. And as time goes on, it's more likely that he will go further down in the line of succession as William and Kate have more children, as they seem inclined to do. But he's built out his own role. As we know, he played a determined role to become a soldier. He wished to serve, and that was highly commendable because having young men fight for their country is a very good thing. And he was willing to do that, and he desperately wanted to do that. He was rebuffed, but eventually got to Afghanistan and committed himself very well. He soon realized that a staff officer's job was not for him, but he's made a very significant mark in his charitable work, and in particular in his initiative of establishing the Invictus Games, the games for the military disabled, not just from Britain, not just from the Commonwealth, but from around the world, which is playing such a significant role in their rehabilitation.
David Flint, he's the national convener for Australians for a Constitutional Monarchy. Flint said the late Princess Diana would be proud of both of her sons, including Harry's decision to take on roles that serve others. Like William's wife Kate, Meghan Markle will not become a princess, although she may become a duchess once Harry, like his brother, becomes a duke. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
This is International Edition. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins me now with some breaking music news.
Today we're talking Grammys, which were just announced as far as nominations go, and we're talking Jay-Z, who leads the Grammys in nominations, which is amazing, which is totally unexpected. Everybody, before the nominations were announced, were predicting it's going to be Ed Sheeran. It's going to be the Ed Sheeran show. Ed's only got 2 nominations. And Jay-Z is nominated for 8 Grammys. He nabbed the most nominations, of course, for the success of his album 444. Now, before you ask, what's the significance of 444?
Yes.
I thought I would tell you.
Okay, good.
Here we go. 444. First of all, the number 44, or fours, are important to Beyonce and Jay-Z, and I'll tell you why. But number 44, that is the number president that Barack Obama was. Mm. And he was very good friends, and is very good friends, with both Jay-Z and his wife Beyonce. So they, you know, might have incorporated 44 in the time, 444. Other things that are connected to fours, Jay-Z's birthday, December 4th. Beyonce's birthday, September 4th. They got married, April 4th.
I see a pattern.
You see a pattern. Lots of fours there. And so there you have it. So 444 is the name of the new album, which is nominated in the Album of the Year category. It's going up against Childish Gambino's Awaken My Love, Damn, Kendrick Lamar, who's been nominated for everything this past year and has won a lot of awards, Lorde's Melodrama, and Bruno Mars' 24 Karat Magic. So let's check out the title track. Here's Jay-Z and 444.
I apologize, orphan woman eyes, took for my child to be born, see through a woman's eyes, took for these natural twins to believe in miracles, took me too long for this song, I don't deserve you.
Okay, Larry, you might not know this, but why was Ed Sheeran, who's been very popular, had a lot of hits as well as Jay-Z, but why was he sort of almost overlooked this year?
I think that they're leaning more hip-hop this year. I can't tell you why, because the Grammy nominations are determined by a Grammy committee. And so there's a lot of votes that factor in, a lot of people who decide ultimately who the nominees will be. But it was very interesting because it is like the hip-hop show this year around. This is the first time for this. Jay-Z has, as I mentioned, 8, and he's the only artist to get nominations in the top 3 categories, record, album, and song of the year. Other nominees who have a lot of awards coming their way, Kendrick Lamar, and he's nominated for 7. Bruno Mars is up for 6. Childish Gambino is also up for 2, along with SZA and Khalid. They're newcomers. They're in the Best New Artist category. And SZA just won the Soul Train Award for Best New Artist. Khalid won the MTV Award for Best New Artist. So it's going to be an interesting show January 28th. And this time around, it's in New York at Madison Square Gardens. Normally, it had been held in Los Angeles. And this time around, they're going to New York to host it. By the way, the Record of the Year category, Redbone, Childish Gambino, Despacito. There's a song you love to hate. 16 weeks at number 1. Luis Fonsi, Daddy Yankee, and Justin Bieber, who just got his very first Latin Grammy Award for the success of Despacito. He might walk away with a regular Grammy for a song in Spanish. The Story of O.J., Jay-Z, is nominated for Record of the Year. Humble, Kendrick Lamar, 24 Karat Magic, Bruno Mars. They're all up for the Record of the Year. And if you want to know other categories, I have them. If not, tune into Border Crossings and we'll talk about it. One of the other interesting things about this year's Grammys, Taylor Swift, 0 nominations. Harry Styles, 0 nominations. And Harry's had a couple of hits off of his debut solo album, Harry Styles. So Very interesting how they made their decisions, but how exactly, I couldn't tell you. Only the folks who voted would know for sure.
All right. Thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings. And that's the music of JC. And that is our show for today. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On his recent trip to Sudan, Deputy Secretary of State John Sullivan stressed that the United States remains committed to engagement with Sudan on a wide range of topics, including the protection of religious freedom and the promotion of other human rights throughout Sudan. In June 2016, Sudan and the United States initiated the so-called five-track engagement plan that required the Sudanese government to cease hostilities in Darfur and the two areas of South Kordofan and Blue Nile states, improve humanitarian access throughout Sudan, refrain from interfering in South Sudan and play a constructive role in regional peace efforts, cooperate with regional efforts to counter the Lord's Resistance Army, and build U.S.-Sudanese cooperation on counterterrorism. In each area, the government of Sudan has made measurable progress. As a result, the United States revoked certain U.S. sanctions on Sudan. But the completion of the five-track engagement plan, said Deputy Secretary Sullivan, is only a first step on a longer road toward fully normalizing our bilateral relations. For Sudan to become a full partner of the United States, it must seek peace within its borders and with its neighbors, and cooperate reliably with the international community to improve security and prosperity in the region and adhere to long-standing international norms, said Deputy Secretary Sullivan. In the years ahead, one measure of the strength of the U.S.-Sudanese relationship will be improvements in Sudan's respect for human rights, and in particular, religious freedom. Interfaith understanding, respect, and the protection of religious freedom and other human rights are bulwarks against extremism, said Deputy Secretary Sullivan. When governments favor a specific religious, ethnic, or sectarian group over others, violent radicalism thrives. The United States calls on Sudan to protect political opposition members, human rights defenders, civil society groups, and the media. We also urge the government to hold accountable all who are responsible for human rights abuses, said Deputy Secretary Sullivan. The U.S. looks forward to working with Sudan to promote a more peaceful and prosperous Sudan, a Sudan that respects the rights of persons of every faith.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.